This is File 16, Cycle 4. Today's date is July 9th, 2019. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Linda Sloan, but this time she is the program director of SOAR, and she's going to talk about her career change after retirement and anything about SOAR that she wishes. But first we'll start with... What is your name?
Linda Sloan.
All right. How did you get involved with SOAR?
I got involved with SOAR almost after I'd been retired for about 10 months and was quickly realizing that doing nothing was not for me, that I wasn't ready for that, and SOAR seemed like the perfect marriage of a part-time job with doing the kinds of things that I liked and excelled at as a teacher. So it was a good combo.
It was a good match.
Yeah, it was a good match for me, and I think it's continued to be a good match for me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Had you had any contact with SOAR before?
Not really. I mean, I've known people who were directors. I mean, my principal for a while, Jenny Law, was one of the directors, and I knew of the program, and I'm not convinced that my own boys weren't there at the very, very beginning when they were playing with it. I just don't remember that title. I think they did take in their middle school years a course or two. So, yeah, I definitely knew about it. And it's sort of a program that's been the envy of all the public schools in the area because they all wish they had a program like
that. Yes.
So the name comes up frequently when you're talking about after school
and that's good.
Opportunities for
and
kids.
And that's good. And when did you actually become program director?
I became program director, I have to think about this, I think in the...
You said July.
July 1, 2017, yes.
Okay. And do you have a program committee?
I do have a program committee, which is made up of teachers, parents, and community members. And it's a great group.
How many?
Right now, we're up to about 9.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Not everybody can come every time, so it's good that we have that. And one of their responsibilities is to be able to volunteer at various events, fundraising events, and SOAR-related events that are not necessarily teaching, workshop teaching.
But there.
So it's good that there's a number of them, because not everybody can make every event, so it works out. But it's a good group of people, and they're very supportive of SOAR, and some people have been on it for a long time.
Who would be the faculty members?
The faculty members right now are Kristen Neary and Jenny Hill. And then the principal, Stephanie Major, is always, whoever the principal is a standing member of the committee. Their responsibilities are such that they are not always able to get to meetings, but Stephanie definitely comes to as many as she's able to come.
Okay.
There's also been a middle school teacher, Brendan, who you know, Riley, who has now stepped down, is going to be replaced by Carol Hackett, who's one of the science teachers at the school.
Hackett?
Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T. Yeah, she's great, so she'll be a great addition to the group.
And what does the program committee actually do?
They advise. They suggest classes. Some really good ideas I've gotten have come from program committee members. They help out with fundraising events. They help to approve of classroom grants that teachers can apply for. Mm-hmm. So they're the committee that vets those and decides whether those are worthy of the financial reward that you get if you're accepted. And they are, you know, they're sort of my ears and eyes on the ground so that they can give me feedback that they hear from people or...
But it's nice to have many people.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, for instance, Molly Salisbury here at the library is on the committee. And it's been wonderful because I know that libraries are always looking for ways to stay relevant. And so it's been a wonderful way for Molly to stay really connected to the school. And we've worked really well together. So she's a real asset on that. On that program committee.
What is your budget for this?
The SOAR budget is around $65,000 a year. It's pretty bare bones because it's just me, basically.
Yeah.
And I would say a good chunk of the money goes to paying for me and supporting programs.
Sure.
So it's, you know, there's not a lot of overhead there. It hasn't changed much, I wouldn't say, the budget over the years. It's stayed pretty...
It's about what I was told when I was doing WESI.
Yeah, right. it hasn't grown particularly, but.
Could you give me 3 workshops that were done last year?
Yeah. One that was very different and very popular was henna.
Yes.
History of henna. Tess probably mentioned that one.
She did.
It was this wonderful native Indian woman who lives in Millerton and clearly very artistic, even though she would tell you that you don't need to be super artistic to do henna. Her background would make a lot of that. But she's very talented. She got interested in henna when the henna woman used to come to her house to make up her mom for various Indian holidays. Mm-hmm. And she started practicing at like probably 8 or 9.
Yeah, that's about right.
And she stayed with it, and now it's really a passion of hers. And so, she had never taught kids before, and she was fabulous. So that was a terrific workshop. The kids loved it. She's actually going to volunteer her time to help at the fall festival, so that the kids, when we do our SOAR craft tent, they'll be offering henna as an opportunity when kids come there. So that was one. Another one that was pretty popular last year was, Red Hawks Cooking, and that has continued to be a super favorite, particularly with older kids.
Red what?
It's called Red Hawks Cooking.
Red Hawk Cooking?
Yeah, and we now do it at the church because they have a super kitchen. And Emily,
and the church being the congregation.
The congregational church. And Emily Armstrong teaches that course, and it really comes back from popular demand every time.
Emily,
we meet 3 Tuesdays. Emily Armstrong. She was a parent at Salisbury Central School and has just stayed interested in the program.
And they meet when?
We meet 3 times during a season, and we do it in the fall and the spring. And we've made everything from foreign delights to cupcakes to all great salads. Emily is a brilliant cook, and so it's just a great, fun time for the kids. It starts later in the afternoon, so it starts at 5. Mm-hmm. So kids actually make dinner, and they eat together. So it has a real social component that's really nice for the kids. Another class that was very popular and we hadn't offered before was offering a nature workshop for kindergarten and first graders offered by Peggy Heck, who you probably remember from Roaring Brook Nature Center.
She was my neighbor.
Yes, and so she did a great job with that. And kindergarten for a long time has not been offered SOAR classes. Mm. I don't offer them in the fall because it's a big adjustment time for kids that age. But I did try it this spring, and it was pretty popular, and I hope to bring Peggy back again in the spring. We just did a lot of nature walking around the grounds. Peggy always brought very interesting, cool things from Roaring Brook for the kids to look at. Mm-hmm. And the kids loved it. So.
Oh, good.
It was a great.
Because that's a good time to start them,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. What different workshops?
Yes.
That's great.
I work for a range. It does seem that parents are very interested in science workshops, and they're very interested in arts-related workshops.
Good, so, because they're different brain function, shall
mm-hmm.
we say.
Right.
Oh, right. And I know you do an online catalog, and thank you very much mm-hmm. for sending it to me. I was very impressed with it.
Yeah.
My word. And the location of the workshops is mostly at Salisbury Central.
Generally, it's at Salisbury Central, but the board has definitely been entertaining the idea of doing more off-site workshops mm-hmm. because there's a lot of people who are interested in offering workshops, but it's hard for them to bring everything they would need to the site.
Yeah.
My one concern is I don't want to have kids who have 2 parents who are working be excluded from those things.
Yeah.
So it's a balance, mm-hmm. and you can hope that you can get those kids carpooled. But, for instance, Hotchkiss has been very generous with their off-site programs. They offer this farm program,
yep.
which has been hugely popular. But this fall, they're going to be doing an art program in the art studios at Hotchkiss, being run by 3 art students at Hotchkiss, along with some faculty members. And they actually will pick up kids and bus them there, and then the parents will then pick up their kids there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. But the majority of the classes, I'd say 85 to 90% of them, happen on campus. But that is definitely something that the board is very interested in, exploring the option of
But again, transportation.
Yes, and it's also very costly. Just to get a school bus is like $150. Mm-hmm. So if we could really, you know, there are some parents who have jobs that they could leave to transport kids.
Yeah, or but no.
So we can, and there are some parents who don't work every day. So there's ways that we can start to try to experiment with that a little bit.
And you've got to be creative.
Yeah,
with that.
Right. No, you do. And you also have to have the right person, because if they're off campus, I can't be with them. Because I need to be on campus, so I have to have instructors that I know
and
will feel comfortable.
And you have to have insurance and
liability. Right.
So I found out with working with the summer youth program that you have to have two adults for each child.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to arrange a tour of Lime Rock, and I can't take the students from here to Lime Rock. And that's
a bit of
a bummer. But,
you know, there's a lot of liability issues that you definitely have to
be
sensitive to.
Roughly how many people per class?
Generally, classes are around 10 kids, although there are some classes that take more. But there's also classes who, due to the nature of what they're doing, or if it's a first-time instructor and they want to test the waters, sometimes it'll be just 8 kids.
Six is
about as low as I go,
just
because of the cost ends up not being financially viable. But
and I'm assuming it's at the discretion of the leader.
It is. I let the instructors have a lot of discretion about that. You know, I want them to want to come back, so I try to accommodate their interests and desires as much as possible. So.
Do they get paid?
They do get paid. Some people waive that fee. I've had this wonderful woman teaching yoga to kids, and she refuses to get paid. So she looks at it as a donation.
Good.
And but most people are around $25 an hour, although there are people who I contract with, like Flying Cloud Institute up in Great Barrington, a very well-established science art program. I contract a set fee with them that's pretty much higher, but within that is all of everything that, you know, you need from materials, really high, you know, usually certified teachers, and so it's, so I, there is a range, but in general people get between $25 and $35 an hour depending on their level of expertise. If I know I'm not going to get someone without offering them $50 an hour, I'll do it, you know.
Yeah, but it depends.
Does.
And that's your discretion.
That is my discretion. Yeah.
And how do you get leaders?
I
contacts.
Yeah, I do. I think having been part of Region 1
makes a difference.
Yeah, and a lot of my friends who are retiring, they're good sources. Mm-hmm. But usually, if you start talking to one person, they'll say, "Oh, do you know so and so?" And it's been surprising the number of people who have been interested in teaching. So
good.
I try to, again, like I said, accommodate people as much as I can, and I try really hard to make them want to come back, so, and make it a positive experience for them.
Well, that's similar to the oral history, because
it's
mushroomed so much. I did Janet Block.
Yeah.
She gave me a couple of names.
Right, exactly.
And it didn't have
anything
to do with
like
SOAR.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and that's great.
Yeah.
Because it broadens the program, it gets it out there, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about Flying Cloud and Great Barrington.
Flying Cloud and Great Barrington isn't something that I knew about until about a year ago. I don't know how I missed this while I was teaching. But it's a group that was actually started by a woman a little bit before SOAR started, who actually, Zenas Block, did a lot of talking to start SOAR. So it started prior to SOAR, but it was some of the inspiration for SOAR. And it's basically a nonprofit, and there's probably maybe 6 or 7 people working there, and many of them are former teachers who, for whatever reason, didn't like public school teaching or were passionate about science and art and found this a much better way to get to it. But they do a lot. They do after-school workshops. That's one branch of their work. They offer summer camps that apparently a lot of kids have gone to and really have loved. And they also work with teachers over in Massachusetts. They do a ton of teaching people about the new science standards and how to do something called productive talk, which is a new approach to the pedagogy around the next generation science standards. So they actually get contracts with public schools. They go into classrooms. They mentor teachers, help them develop units of study. And
where in Great Barrington?
They are actually, you know, that big old church right in the center of town. As you come into Great Barrington,
there's a lot of
St. James.
St. James. It used to be the Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm. They're up on the second floor. There's quite a few offices there.
Yes, I use, believe it or not, that's where I taught Sunday school.
Okay, that's a smart way to, you know, make your church viable is to rent out office space. So they have a couple of rooms there.
Okay.
But since most of their work is outreach, they don't really need a lot of space.
Okay.
It's a great group of people and very talented teachers, and I really love the director of Flying Club.
Oh, that's
She's
wonderful.
Great.
And who is the director?
Her name is Maria Rundle, and she and I are...
And how do you spell Rundle?
R-U-N-D-L-E. She and I were very simpatico on our approach to teaching kids and all that, so
great.
I like that about them.
And how about the Wasaic Project?
That was a great find, too. Wheezy actually used them, but...
Yes, they...
She did a couple of workshops with them. That's a whole nother nonprofit that's very well-funded by their board and other people, and it's in an incredibly old mill building in Wasaic, and it is a group that helps support artists in short-term residencies. Like, artists will step out of their life for 8 weeks and come up and live at the Wasaic Project and do their art, and a lot of times that art extends into working with kids in the public schools. They've done a lot of work at Weebatuck and over in that neck of the woods. And the director there is this really delightful young woman named Tara Foley, who she herself is incredibly artistic and very creative. Definitely thinks outside of the box.
Oh,
she's
good.
Actually offering a workshop this fall that I'm very excited about because it approaches art from a completely different way than kids typically get taught art in public school. So I think that'll be great. But she's going to be teaching about how do artists get inspired? What do they use as their inspiration? And she's actually going to do it with young kids. So it'll be very interesting to see how she does that. But anyway, she's the director of it, and she is very open to working with me on the artists and residents who come up there, of looking for opportunities to get into the schools. We had a terrific artist in residence program this year with a wonderful woman who did art through writing. The kids really looked at art and wrote some poetry around it, and they published a little magazine at the end of the year that everybody got to take home, and it was with all the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at Salisbury Central. It was like a mini residency over 5 days in the winter, and it was terrific. Tara helped, but the woman was named Julia Bosson.
Julia.
B-O-S-S-O-N, and she, again, took 8 weeks out of her life and came up and lived here, and that was what she did, and I think the kids really responded well to it, and the language arts teachers in the middle school were really supportive and terrific to work with, so.
Wonderful.
Great project.
And you've already talked a bit about Molly Salisbury and the Hotchkiss project.
Yeah, no, they've been great.
Now, you have a grant program for the faculty at Salisbury Central. How much do they...
Typically, a grant, people can apply for $150, but there are some classes that are a little bit bigger, so we've just revamped the whole criteria for that. So the teachers who have larger classes now have the opportunity to ask for more. There's also, on very rare occasions, if there's something really extraordinary, that we will grant a much bigger grant. Like this year, the American Civic Life Project is going to be in the middle school, and SOAR gave a pretty generous grant to help support that.
And what is the American Civic
Life?
Was it over at the high school?
Dominic Lesser.
Okay.
I can't remember. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Bill Willis's son
was
in it.
Yes, he was very involved. Exactly.
Okay. Then I know.
And now I think every Region 1 elementary school and the middle school is going to be working with them to help kids create a real documentary. So they'll be doing filmmaking and teaching civics through that vehicle. So we're not supporting the teaching of civics because that's regular curriculum, but we are supporting the learning how to make film documentaries. So there's an application form that teachers fill out, and then it goes to the program committee and we review it, and then we decide how much money they'll get, and it's a way of supporting enrichment initiatives within the classroom. So it also makes sure that kids who don't go to SOAR still have an exposure to SOAR.
They no longer do the gifted and talented.
No.
That's so many things have changed.
Yeah, not many schools do that anymore, only because it's not required.
Yeah.
For a while it was required,
yes.
And now it's not. Mm-hmm. So a lot of schools can't afford to do it. There are some schools in wealthier districts who I think still have those programs.
But. Do you still sponsor all school assemblies?
Yes, we do. It doesn't necessarily have to be an assembly. Like this year, we're going to be partnering with the Flying Cloud Institute to have a STEAM night in February.
A what night?
A STEAM night. Like science, technology, engineering, art, and math night. Where at the school, we're going to be working with some of those teachers at the Salisbury Central and some of the teachers at Flying Cloud. And it'll be a family night that people can come to the school and try out little booths and little activities that are all related to that. So it's not necessarily an assembly. But we also, I think I mentioned this Two Books, One
yes.
School program.
Tell about that, please.
Yeah, well, that's something that was started in Sharon Center School by Judy Gaffney, and I really loved the idea, and Molly really loved the idea, because it's a wonderful way to make sure kids are reading and mm-hmm. still want to come to libraries. And so each year we pick two books, one for 4th grade through 8th grade and one through K through 3, and you read the book over the summer, and then there's some kind of program around it when you come back to school. And Molly's been great about arranging that. She's arranged Skype interviews with both of the authors of the books we chose this year to happen pretty much that first week of school.
Okay. I have down, and I don't understand why I wrote it, I had a supper. Or support from the principal? Yeah,
yeah.
You support.
Yeah, I have great support from the principal. She's, I think any principal who comes there sees that SOAR is a pretty mainstream part of the school.
Oh, yeah,
and
it should be.
Yeah, and that, you know, it's to their advantage to support it, and Stephanie's followed in that suit, so she's been very supportive. I think this year there may be a rub, and that there may be less classroom space, but I imagine she'll work that out with me.
Oh, probably.
There's a new program that's coming to the school that has nothing to do with SOAR that's going to need some real estate. So it may lessen my real estate, which could be problematic, but I am trusting that she will come up with an alternative.
We'll work something out.
Yeah.
We always
yeah.
do. How about the teachers? Are they supportive?
Very. In fact, some of them actually teach. There's a terrific teacher there who does some enrichment things during the day called the XLPlex, where she teaches a lot of problem solving and engineering.
XLPlex.
Yeah, it's located in the library, and it's really kind of what you call a makerspace. I don't know if you've ever heard
oh,
of what a
yes,
makerspace
yeah.
is. Yeah. So it's similar to that, and kids love going there. She's very artistic herself, and she's very talented in terms of coming up with these great activities. She's actually going to be teaching a workshop this fall. And other teachers have too, but most teachers are really supportive. They help
good.
With sending catalogs home to families, and
good.
You know
that's
they,
what makes it work.
And I, you know, am encouraging as many of them as possible to apply for these grants. So yeah, no, they really see that it's a real asset for the kids.
And there's a lot of community involvement.
Yeah, definitely. I would say most of the instructors, if they're not from Salisbury Central School, that they are from the community, pretty much this local community. And yes, I think the community is very supportive through donating money to the program, to getting involved, or to, you know, being an instructor or offering resources as they can.
Well, we've got a very unusual community, and there's so many talented people here.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
They are willing to share.
Right, right.
You know, and that's,
yeah.
I think it's rare.
And that's where Molly's great, because the library's really cultivated a lot of those people, and she
yes.
knows a lot of those
yes.
people. So often I'll say, oh, I'd love to be able to offer a class around this, and she'll be like, oh, I know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She's
good.
Really good that way.
And SOAR has been in existence for almost 20
years. This
yeah.
is its 20th year this year.
Yeah. Future plans.
Future plans
mm-hmm.
are to keep the program robust and moving along. This year we hope to do some kind of 20th year celebration to look at all the great work that's happened over the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think mostly just to keep it going strong, continue to offer a diverse range of programs. And I don't necessarily think much needs to be changed in the formula.
No.
I think it's just keeping
it works. Don't mess with it.
Keeping it good.
Yeah.
Keeping it working and keeping it strong. I think the one thing that would be great is to enhance some of our funding sources, but the community has been very generous, and we've definitely been approaching fundraising a little bit differently, which has paid off. So.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked?
No, I don't think so. You've asked a lot of good questions about the program.
And you've given a lot of good answers about the program.
No, it's a great program. I think probably one of its greatest assets is that one, Janet Block. She's still very involved.
Mm-hmm.
But it really hasn't had what I call a lot of mission creep. It stayed pretty true to Zenas's original mission. And organizations can easily grow and move pretty far off from what they originally were intended to do. But SOAR's remained pretty true to its roots, and it hasn't changed a lot. So I think that's a credit to all the people who came before me and all the people who have been on boards and fair over the year for SOAR, that they've kept it what it is.
And they've all shared the vision.
Yeah, I think so. They've all felt that was important. So I think that's pretty extraordinary.
Yes, it
and
is.
It's had a lot of different directors, a lot of different boards,
yep.
and
yep.
it's easy to change an organization's identity with those kinds of shifts.
Wonderful.
But we haven't.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I can finish up some SOAR work, speaking of SOAR work.